offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem and with me is Arvind, and we're joining you from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. It is indeed a pleasure to join you again on this program, and to start off with at the very outset, a very, very happy Ladies' Day to all of you. The 19th of November, I think from the year 1995, has been observed as the Ladies' Day at Prashanthi Nilayam, and of course, like all the other festivals this year, this Ladies' Day is also quite different from what we've had in the past few years. But nevertheless, the contribution and the inspiration that the ladies give all of us, the many, many women devotees that Swami has inspired us with, we offer our most loving salutations to all of them, and we wish all the ladies who are listening to this program a very special and auspicious Ladies' Day to all of you. We are going to continue with the satsang that we were doing last week on conversations with Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, because we were stopping somewhere midway, so we thought we might as well complete that. But before we do all of that, let's ask Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and Sairam to all our listeners. You know, Prem, when you were wishing all our women listeners, lady listeners, a happy Ladies' Day, I was just reminded of that episode right now. I don't remember the name of the saint, but when he had to listen to Mirabai singing, he said that it was his tradition that he never goes in the presence of a woman, because he's always keeps the company, he always stays gender segregated, whatever like that. But it is Mirabai who responds to him saying that, "But I thought all of us are women." And when this is conveyed to him, he comes running and falls at the feet of Mira. And it is explained that there is only one Purushottama, the one Purusha, the actual male principle, there is only one, and that is the divine. Rest Prakriti, or the creation, is supposed to be the female aspect. And in that sense, it's a happy Ladies' Day to all of us, because all of us are part of Prakriti, unless and until we realize that oneness with the Purusha. And when we do that, we become one with the Purusha. And then alone can we call ourselves as the masculine gender in that sense. Interestingly, the point where we stopped last week, I think we will repeat the ending portion, because it is so relevant. It is about Purusha and Prakriti, and it is about masculinity and femininity, God and the devotee. I'll just read it out once again, and we'll discuss and take on the discussion from there. Hislop, you know, he's stating that in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna called Krishna as divine, and Swami says that still there was the body view of comrade, friend and relative. Only after Krishna left the body did Arjuna realize that Krishna was God. Even in their status as kings, only the residents of their respective cities gave Rama and Krishna homage and worship. The Sai Avatar is the only such where his divinity is known to all people of all religions. Never has there been that before. Then Swami adds, with Krishna, only the Gopikas were aware of him as God. But they were Rishis. And Hislop says, they were Rishis, Swami? As Rishis they took birth as ignorant villagers? And Swami says, yes, they were great Rishis before taking that birth. When Krishna died, the gopis stopped taking food and they discarded their bodies in that way. You know, so here Swami is speaking about what we call as Karana Janmas, people who take birth with a purpose. So, though these are self-realized Rishis, they know that there is a different kind of joy in being one with the Lord when he takes an avatar. And I think that this is possibly the case, because even God seems to get bored in that Advaitic unity, Advaitic oneness, because Swami says, I separated myself from myself so that I can love myself. For love to flow, there is a requirement for this duality, I think. And that's why the Lord takes an avatarhood. And when the Lord takes an avatarhood, all these rishis who are already self-realized, they also take on a form and come only for the sake of experiencing that oneness and experiencing that friendship with the Lord. The penultimate step before Atmanivedanam in the ninefold path is Sakhyam. So, to enjoy Sakhyam, it looks like Sakhyam or Sneham, friendship, is so much more inviting and beautiful than Atmanivedanam or becoming one with God himself. And that is the kind of relationship. And I think that is what the Gopikas symbolize also. They symbolize the Prakriti or the negative. When I say negative, it's not like positive negative, but like the two terminals for an electric current to flow. They represent the negative and the Lord represents the positive. And in their union is the divine current.
If you sometimes look at this, as you were saying, you know, there is absolutely nothing wrong in referring to each one of us as being part of that same Prakriti, and in that sense we all are feminine. I think there's a very deeper meaning to it. If, even when you look at the idea of Prakriti itself, it means there's something more subtler to that idea itself. If you look at nature and how nature responds, there's the sense of calmness and the sense of prepared to be patient and perseverant in nature itself. And oftentimes Swami would say that that is the quality that you find embodied even in the gender female. When it comes to women, when it comes to devotees of the Lord who are women, you always find that sense of readiness to be patiently waiting. You have such examples from all the epics. The Gopikas we are talking about, Mother Shabari is one example that Swami would often give, and many
Draupadi.
Yes, Draupadi is one of the greatest examples. Swami used to be so fond of that example. And the example or the inspiration which Swami draws from these personalities is not merely for women, right? It is for all of us, because everybody needs that little bit of a drag, as somebody very beautifully said. You know, oftentimes when you look at a car or a vehicle, we think of the brakes being there so that you can stop or slow down. But one of the engineers, automobile engineers, was saying the brakes are there so that the car can move fast. Because without the idea of having a braking system, you cannot have speed at all, right? So we often think that the idea of patience and resilience and forbearance and all that is old-fashioned and kind of pulls you down, but we don't realize that is what is required for progress. And in that sense, this quality that is embodied in women and Gopikas especially, I think earlier we had that very beautiful conversation in which there was a contrast between the way Arjuna responded to the news of Krishna passing away and then how the Gopikas responded. And when talking about Gopika, Swami didn't say that they ended their life. Swami was saying that their association with this world was only because their Lord was in the physical form. And the moment they heard that their Lord had moved on, absolutely nothing held them back to this physical realm. And in a very, very natural way, they let go of their lives and they merged in the Lord. And really, this is the example that Swami would often say whenever we talk about Ladies' Day. Probably even as we are talking about Ladies' Day and Ladies' Day messages that Swami gives, today's Ladies' Day message that we'll be playing in the evening too, Swami speaks of the vision that Swami has for women.
Absolutely. And I think we will leave that for Swami himself to share.
Right.
But it's so beautiful. And when we are speaking about the Gopikas, you know, what Gopikas are generally known for in the world today, or anybody takes from whatever little they know of Gopikas, is that they have a lot of devotion. They are definitely Bhakti Marga. But what is interesting is when this Bhakti or love for God, intense love for God, combines with forbearance and patience, what you spoke about, it becomes a very, very potent mix. You know, because devotion is something like intensity, and this perseverance is about, patience is about persevering it, ensuring that that intensity lasts. Otherwise, if there is devotion without this perseverance, it almost is equal to emotion, as Swami would say. It's an emotion that comes, we ourselves have felt it while listening to a bhajan possibly, or in some situation in life when we hear Swami's discourse words or anything, a music. All of us have got emotional, we have tears welling up in our eyes. But that doesn't last through for an hour or through the day or through the week or throughout. It is when that kind of emotion comes towards God and it lasts forever, it becomes devotion. So therefore, it is important that there is perseverance and patience along with devotion. And when that happens, I mean, you know, who can say that Gopikas who were illiterate cowherdesses and the gopis who are illiterate cowherds, they are not wise. It appears that they are not wise. They are not knowledgeable. They are not well-read. But they are so wise. And the example that comes to my mind is the foremost among the Gopikas. Though she enjoyed Krishna's physical presence for just a few years in her life, she has become synonymous with Krishna. Yes, I am speaking about the Gopika called Radha. In fact, Swami would say that's why every time you'll never see people saying Krishna Radha. They always say Radha Krishna. Radha Krishna. So that is the importance. And there's one famous bhajan also that goes as Radha ke bina Shyam Adha.
Right.
Meaning without Radha, Shyam is half. And why? Her devotion led to such wisdom. She always pined to be one with Krishna always. And with such intense yearning and pining and craving, what does she get? Krishna just in a sense abandons Gokula and goes to Mathura, kills Kamsa and never again returns back to Vrindavana. But then, you know, Swami has narrated how when he actually comes back, what happens. That is such a beautiful narration, I'll leave it at that. But the gist of it is, Krishna sees that Radha is not thrilled or excited or anything by his physical form. And he says, Radha, don't you miss me? Then Swami on another occasion has said how Radha replies saying, Krishna, how can I miss you? When I see the Yamuna, I see you. When I see the moon, I see you. When I see, everywhere it's you. She says the Yamuna water was filled into 10 pots. And all the 10 pots reflected the moon. Wouldn't it be foolish for one pot to think that the moon is mine? No, the moon reflects in everything. The moon belongs to everyone. That was Radha's way of showing her wisdom that I don't own you, Krishna, but that doesn't mean I can't see you everywhere. I see you everywhere. And that is the wisdom that Radha embodied, and possibly that is the wisdom that all other Gopikas too embodied. But it is so beautiful, and today being Ladies' Day, I think it's very apt that we listen to this, if I can say, audio presentation of Swami narrating an interaction between Krishna and Radha. This is after Krishna returns. What happens, and the song that is sung, it's so beautiful. It was a special audio, I think, that Radio Sai had created an year ago or a couple of years ago. We'll play that for you, dear listeners. Don't go anywhere, because even if you have something urgent to do, if you want, you can miss this satsang later on, but don't miss this song. This is so beautiful. It is sure to evoke surging waves of at least emotion in each heart, and we can nourish that emotion and grow it into true devotion.
The incessant flow of worship to Krishna was Radha's very life. In thoughts of Krishna, she was forever lost. His form danced before her eyes every moment, wakeful and dream. The blue hues of the gurgling Yamuna reminded her of Krishna's charming complexion. The merry chirping of birds stirred in her memories of Krishna's mischievous chuckles. In Vrindavan, when Krishna would play upon his flute, her days passed like moments, filling every moment with that memory. She spent her days. All that stood between Krishna and Radha's union was her mortal frame. The day finally came when even that would seamlessly slip away.
Vakka korika korindi paapam Radha.
Radha had one desire.
Nakinkemi vaddu Swami.
I don't want anything more, Swami.
Nee muralini okka thuri vaayinchandi nenu vintanu chaalani.
I want to listen to your flute.
Paata paadu maa Krishna parukute
nelalukunnattu. You sing the glory and the melody so that our hearts are full.
Paata paadu maa Krishna
She heard. She breathed her last. Since then, Krishna did not pick up that flute again. He sacrificed his flute for her.
గానంను త్యాగం చేశాడు.
అండ్ దెన్ ద మెలడీ టు
నట్ట కడపటి పాట కృష్ణుడు ఇది ఒక్కటే చెప్పింది.
ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ దిస్ వాజ్ ద లాస్ట్ సాంగ్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ.
రాధ చాలా గొప్ప భక్తురాలు.
రాధ ఇస్ ఎన్ ఆర్డెన్ డివోటీ.
కనుకనే భక్తికి అంత గొప్ప విలువనిచ్చారు.
డివోషన్ ఇస్ హైలీ వాల్యుబుల్.
ఇట్టి భక్తిని ఆనాటి నుంచి గోపికలు జగత్తును వ్యాప్తి గావించేటట్టుగా అనేక ప్రచార ప్రపంచములు చేస్తూ వచ్చారు.
దిస్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ డివోషన్ హాస్ బీన్ టాట్ అండ్ షేర్డ్ అండ్ ప్రొపగేటెడ్ బై దిస్ గోపికాస్.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We hope you enjoyed that beautiful song. You've heard it being rendered in Swami's voice so many times, and whenever Swami would speak of that, Swami would say that is why Radha had this special place in Krishna's heart. And Swami would say that, I mean, you'd have heard it in that discourse where Swami says from that day, Krishna stops playing the flute, gives it up for her. We will continue with the satsang on the book Conversation with Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, because this entire conversation about Gopikas, just to give you a background of that, because we covered that last week. Swami was coming back from a visit to Mudanali. Swami was speaking about the teachers over there who are referred to as Tyagajivis, and Swami was telling how wonderful their contribution is and their sacrifice is, at which Hisla asked this question of, Swami, they are such great devotees, but it is still a wonder that Swami says that he has still not found that true devotee. We played that Padim also last week, where Swami says, I'm still searching for that true devotee, a true human being. So that is the context in which Swami also speaks about Gopikas, where Swami says the true devotees are actually the Gopikas. Swami does not even mention Arjuna, because Swami says that he did have glimpses of his divinity, but not until later that he could really grasp the immensity of this truth that Krishna was an avatar. It was only the Gopikas who lived in that feeling and remained there in that state. So Hisla asks the next question after this particular conversation. He says, Swami, the matter of a true devotee in this avatar is still a big puzzle. Swami has said that in this very lifetime, there are men fully liberated from delusion. Would not even they meet the test for a true devotee? Swami responds, a life fully liberated would meet the tests of a true devotee as said by Swami. So that is the standard that Swami sets for those who are whom he would qualify as the true devotees. Then Hisla continues, then for those who would seek that status, what about those who seek that status? Then Mr. Srinivas, as we said, Swami is in the car, and Mr. Srinivas and Mr. Radhakrishna were there with Swami. So Mr. Srinivas interjects with his reply. He says, they should do perfect sadhana. And Swami's response to that is very interesting. Swami says, sadhana? No, that is physical. It is a matter of love. Confidence comes first. Where there is love, there is peace. Where there is peace, there is truth. Where there is truth, there is bliss. Where there is bliss, there is God. So when Mr. Srinivas, the other devotee, says that it calls for sadhana, I think Swami is talking of a state which comes way beyond sadhana, and where I think in some of his discourses Swami mentions, from that state sadhana becomes an expression of your love. What state we are all in, we are trying to do sadhana to achieve, acquire something, that love, acquire that oneness. But Swami is talking of a state where, when you talk of the smarana which somebody like Radha did, or the kirtana like somebody like Mirabai did, that is not sadhana, that is an expression of love. They were in that oneness, and that love which Swami is speaking of, expressed as music, as poetry, as longing, and as constant thinking of Krishna.
See, when in the beginning you said that Swami differentiates even between the Gopikas and Arjuna. Arjuna on the battlefield was given that Vishwavirata Swarupa Darshana, meaning the darshan of the cosmic form of Krishna. And that is when he saw that Krishna is there in the mountains, in the rivers, he is there in all the animals, the beasts, the birds, he is there in the enemies, he is there in the relatives. It's all Krishna everywhere, and he is just spellbound by that vision. Though that Vishwavirata Darshana, Rupa Darshana is given a lot of importance even in our serials and books or wherever it is there, that is a landmark episode to be shown. What possibly we forget is that these Gopikas are having that experience throughout. When Radha says that, I look at the moon, I see you, when I see the Yamuna, I see you, the trees swing to your rhythm, the bees are singing your songs, everywhere it's you only, Krishna, how will I ever miss you? Oh my God, it just makes you realize that this is possibly the darshan of the Vishwavirata Swarupa. We think that it is a cosmic figure with, you know, we have something, a thousand hands, a thousand heads, Sahasra Shirasha Purushaha Sahasraksha Sahasrapath, as the Vedas say, that the cosmic being has a thousand heads and a thousand hands. And Swami has clarified that too in the discourses, saying that's because it is not as if the cosmic being has a thousand heads. It only refers that all the thousand heads that you see around belong to him. Meaning, only when you are able to see that divine in everyone, will you be able to have the darshan of the cosmic lord. In that sense also, you know, it's so apt that on Ladies' Day we are speaking about this. I think every Gopika had the Vishwavirata Rupa Darshana, which we think was exclusively had by Arjuna in the battlefield.
Very true. And, you know, when we talk about the Gopikas, when you talk about these characters of the epics, you really don't get a sense of, you know, what that life of devotion and dedication would have been. And it is really Swami's grace on us that he has given live examples for us whom we can look at, who have shown that kind of dedication, and, you know, the many, many women devotees who have served Swami. I just happened to be going through the article we had published long time ago about Miss Jayalakshmi Gopinath, who we fondly refer to as Jayama Madam. If you really look at it, they came to Swami, they come from the very traditional Madhva tradition, I think, you know, where they very strictly stick to the worship of Krishna. So with a lot of opposition, they come to Swami. The elders in that tradition were very upset with her father, Mr. Vithal Rao, great devotee again, for coming to Swami. They said, you know, who is this boy in Andhra you're going to? This is blasphemy and all that. Facing all those oppositions, holding on to their faith, they come to Swami. And, you know, we know that they come to Swami very early, in the early Chitravati Pathamandiram days they come. But imagine, you have literally fought for your faith that way. You get your daughter married and she gets widowed when she's in the 30s. And that's what happens. And you can imagine the kind of mockery which would have been around you. People would have told you, that's why we told you don't go to Swami. So she says, you know, that after that disaster happens in her life, she comes to Vrindavan and Swami calls her and her father for an interview. She doesn't have a mother by then. Mother has already moved on. So she says that there's no way she can go and live with her father. There is no mother's home in that sense. And for her, it was very clear the mother's home is where Swami is. She has to come and stay where Swami is. So in that interview, Swami asked her, okay, what do you want to do? So by then, her sisters have been asking her, why didn't you come and settle down with us? And she says, Swami, I want to be with you. You know, wherever I am, I should be with you. Then Swami looks at Mr. Vithal Rao and says, what do you want your daughter to do? Where do you want her to be? He also gives a very plain look and he says, Swami, with you. Where else will she be? And instantly Swami says, you know, apparently Swami holds his hand and says, you've given your daughter to me. I will ensure that till the end I take care of her. Right? And that is how apparently when Swami tells her to go and join the Anantapur College. So she goes, even though Swami has told that you should go and join the Anantapur College, she has a formal interview. So she is very tensed and she goes for the interview. Imagine, she walks into the interview room and in the panel, Swami is one of the panelists sitting there. And she goes and they ask few questions. I think Gokak must have been there among the others. So when they come out, the first person to come out of that interview room is Swami. And Swami comes and, you know, apparently brings an orange fruit with him, gives it to her and says, hey, you got selected. And she's so happy. When she goes and joins the department, somebody in the department tells her, actually 1 year back Swami told us that you're going to come and join. Keep on place for her. This was much before even her husband passed away. Right? At that moment when you look at it, it looks like this is God being unfair to a devotee, you know, and this devotee and this family who has really stuck on to Swami, such a disaster is coming to their family. But imagine after 30 years, is there any Sai devotee who will look at Jayama Madam and not feel envious of the kind of life she has led, the kind of dedication with which she has lived her life? And they're all such examples. And our primary school teachers, Mrs. Prem Bell, she's another person who got widowed very early. And they all took that as an opportunity that Swami has created for them to come and serve Swami. And today, how many generations of students look up to them as inspiration and devotion?
You know, Prem, when you were narrating, it just struck me that if we look at it in another perspective, if you think that, Swami, I am also yearning and craving for you, but, you know, you have given it to somebody, but you are not giving me. Though Swami has it planned that in 1 year, Jayama Madam is going to join, I think he let things unfold as they are, just to show to the world what is her worth.
Right.
Look at that. At that moment, she could have just told, Swami, what is this? I have given my life to you and I am widowed and what the situation you have put me in. But she didn't do that. And I think it's an example for you yearn to be close to me like her. See what she has done. In fact, Swami would narrate in his discourse that as a child when he would go wandering in the hills, Subhama would come looking for him. And because she would feel that, oh my God, this Swami is not fed. For this Satyam is not fed. How can I? And she had such love, and it was not just maternal love. It was also the love of a devotee to the Lord, for she recognized. And otherwise, why will an ostracized and criticized boy get shelter at the most important and biggest home in the village? Because she felt, this is God, this is my Krishna. And in fact, Swami would say that after all the difficulty, when she comes to me and she says, Satya, you have not had, Raju, you have not had breakfast, have something. Swami would say that I would ask her, what have you brought? She would tell, I have brought idli. I don't want idli, I want dosa. And then Swami would say that she will tell, I have got dosa also. Oh, you have got dosa also. I made a mistake. I actually want upma. And she will tell, I have upma as well. And you know, in his discourse, years after Karanam, Subhama has passed on. And you know, that is another magnificent story of how Swami keeps up his word, resurrects her and feeds her water, and then only allows her to go. We will not go into that today. But in the discourse, Swami says, I didn't want to trouble Karanam Subhama, but I wanted to show the world what devotion she had. In those rural conditions, when resources are very hard to come by, when, you know, in those times when we actually visit those times and see, in Swami's own home, if you see, they just make food once in the day in the morning. And that is what they eat throughout, and next day early morning, that's also the breakfast. That's how it is. In such a situation, here's a lady who is cooking four varieties, just for the whims and fancies of what the world looks at as a chit of a boy. That is devotion. And Swami tells in the discourse, I want the world to know what kind of devotion Karanam Subhama had. That is why I kept asking her, have you brought idli, have you brought vada? And that is what it is. I mean, any number. Another woman devotee that comes to my mind is Ratanlal Aunty, Ratanlal Amma. You know, Swami used to call her Ratanlal Amma. She has had the unique, singular privilege of feeding Swami for decades. In fact, the last few months before Swami left his physical body, we have very concrete evidence to say, show that it was only her food that Swami kept eating, nothing else he ate. Even to her, you know, she was narrating how, you were speaking about Jayama ma'am and Anandpur College. During the Anandpur College inauguration, she was like a one-woman army to take care of hosting all of Swami's guests, which included the then President of India, Mr. V.V. Giri. And what the world doesn't know, the world even doesn't know that she took on the catering services, but even the world who knows that doesn't know that at that time, Ratanlal Aunty had a severe stomach ulcer. And it is kudos to her that she never brought it up in front of Swami. She kept going to the side, vomiting blood, but kept at her duty of cooking, getting the kitchen, the temporary kitchen which was set up to keep it clean, ensure that there is food rolling out constantly, all that. So much so that at the end of the day, when the day was finished, she just collapsed in her bed, fatigued, you know, thinking, how is it that I am still alive? I have vomited out so much blood, I think I am gone. And at that time, you know, somebody comes and tells, Ratanlal, Mrs. Ratanlal, Swami is saying, what, you are lying down, he needs you, he is calling you up. You know, at that time, I am just thinking, you would have just said, what does he know, what I am going through, you know, I am half dead here, he didn't even bother, no. At that point in time, you know, as Ratanlal aunty is narrating it, she says that, I was wondering how to go up, because I am not able to walk, and here is a man who has come, I can't hold his hand, you know. Even at that time, she is thinking, what is dear to Swami? So she refused. And she held on holding the wall. She says she just dragged herself up the steps. And on the last step, she fell down. Fell down meaning she just collapsed. She sat and she said, I'll take a few breaths and come. But Swami himself came there and said, what, Ratanlal Amma? And she says, in his hand was his glass of water. And he was drinking water. He has got up and come and he's asking, what? What is this you sat down? And she says, I told Swami, you sit there and have your water. I'll come. Just I'm taking a little breather. Immediately Swami materialized Vibhuti, told her to open her mouth, put it in her mouth, poured water from his own glass, told her, drink it, go down, I'll call you again. Called her again after an hour, did the same thing, one more hour, same thing, and she says, from that day, no more ulcer problems, bleeding, everything stopped, she was perfectly fine. You know, when we listen to this experience, we think, how lucky is she? But look at the love she had, the intensity, the faith that she had. Never complaining. I think that is the quality of kshama or forbearance. Never complaining because you know that my Swami can't do anything wrong for me. It is for my best, and therefore every moment I'll celebrate the love that the Lord has for me and the love that I have for the Lord. Indeed, you know, we are blessed that we have accounts of so many such great women who are such torchbearers for us in our journey of love, yearning and pining for our dear Swami.
Yeah, the other day I was listening to a conversation with some of these students who are from the Ooty school.
Mm-hmm.
And something they said was very beautiful and very moving. You know, young children, first standard, second standard, I think it was there till sixth or seventh at that time. So they would say that in the same set of teachers, because that happens even in Prashanthi Nilayam, but in Ooty it was even more because the campus was so secluded, it was not part of the Prashanthi Nilayam ashram or anything in that sense. So there were only a set of teachers whom they would fondly refer to as akkas and ammas and madams or whatever it was that. They were the ones who used to take care of them in the hostel. Then in the classroom they become their teachers. Right? And even at that age, what stunned them was the professionalism with which they taught when they were teachers, the motherliness with which they were able to switch to that motherliness when they were in the hostel and care for their personal needs. And one of the students was telling that, you know, when we look back now, you look at both. You look at their ability to deliver, right, as professionals, as teachers, and their ability to do that as what you would do in your house. And both of that came out of their love for Swami. Both they were doing it as like, this is our dedication to Swami. So imagine how many generations of children have seen that, and they've learned that, you know, this is what will please Swami. This is how you can do anything that you do to please Swami. There's one student who was saying that after about 15 or 20 years, he was going to the primary school. Because after his education, he had moved on after he finished his BSc and all that. He was somewhere in some country abroad. He said, I came back, I'd put on 20 kgs, I'd grown a mustache and beard that time when I came. Imagine I walk into the primary school, I'm walking past that gateway after 20 years. At that same place, warden auntie is sitting, you know, late Prem Bell madam. She sits in one strategic place just near the entrance. Same with her. She used to always have a Satcharitra book with her, a phone next to her. So he walks in, just like she would accost him 20 years ago when he walked in as a student. She calls him by name. And she asks, how are you? And he was stunned. He said, I'm coming to Parthi. Nobody will know me. I've changed so much. I'm coming after so many years. But imagine that kind of memory also comes only out of interest and love. When you're doing something for Swami, I think everything falls into place. And that's why these are all, we should remember. Swami has given us so many examples around us to remember and celebrate during the Ladies' Day.
When you're saying about warden auntie, it's very touching and moving, Prem. Like even now, if you walk into primary school, that chair has been kept for her. You know, even now, those are the folding kind of chairs that are permanently fixed. So whichever warden auntie used to sit on, that chair has a photograph of warden auntie. And again, this beautiful kind of practice has been done by the existing teachers and Munni auntie, who is another legendary figure,
right,
who's been taking care of the hostel and who's the headmistress there. I was just thinking, you know, whether it's warden auntie or Ratanlal auntie, both of them came from very illustrious families and they gave up everything for Swami's sake, just like Jayama madam, anybody whom we have spoken about, and they stayed here, dedicated their life for Swami, did everything as they would do for Swami. And Prem, being in Puttaparthi, which has an average age which is higher than normal than Indian cities, we have a lot of elderly people here, a lot of retired people. People have made Puttaparthi into their retirement plan because it's very comfortable, and usually people who have retired find it very hard to occupy themselves with something, and for that there is the mandir, you know. So that's why it's a retirement haven, and a lot of people have retired here, so which means a lot of deaths also happen in Puttaparthi because of old age. And I think in the last 10 years, I might have attended at least 100 funerals. But among all these 100, two funerals that stand out in my memory, one of warden auntie, one of Ratanlal auntie. You know, it was such an overwhelming sight to see, my God, the procession stretching out for half a kilometer. There were at least 3,000 to 4,000 people who had come. It was amazing. You know, it was amazing. And it just showed how many people they have touched. You know, possibly if somebody's uncle or aunt passes away, they may say that, you know, this is a difficult circumstance, I can't travel that far. But people traveled from other countries as well when these two women passed on. I'm sure others are also like that, but these two I personally witnessed. It was very, very moving. And usually what happens is the cremation ground is a good 2 kilometers away, and therefore the there is a van that carries the body. But in this case, the entourage that followed behind the van stretched from the cremation ground till the hospital itself. You know, that was the they say that the way a person leaves the world, from that you can judge the way the person has led their life. My God, just see, even if you don't know anything about Ratan Lal auntie or Warden auntie, if you just attended their funeral, you will know one thing for sure, that whoever this person is loved immensely by everyone. It's not humanly possible that you can give your love to so many people and become so beloved, unless it is divine love that you are embodying, because it's only divine love that is infinite. And without doubt, these great women of Swami embodied that divine love in them.
I mean, this being the season of Diwali, I'm reminded of another great devotee whom Swami used to speak of. I think in Trayi sessions, Swami has spoken to us a few times, Dr. Rajeshwari. She used to be in charge of the general hospital in Bangalore.
A gynecologist, if I'm not mistaken.
Not too sure, but she was the superintendent for many years. She's the one who set up the entire hospital. And Swami used to speak of her so fondly. Apparently, one day, her son was studying in the university in those days, in the old Vrindavan. And suddenly, one day, Swami came and tells, Swami is in Parthi at the time, Swami tells the son, yeah, I went and wished your mother on Diwali and came. On Deepavali, I went and gave her darshan and came. He's wondering, what is this? And when he spoke to his mother, he came to know that she was sleeping in her room. Early in the morning, she heard a knock in the door. And she heard a very familiar voice, and it was calling out, Dr. Amma, Dr. Amma. And she thought that this is how Swami calls me. Who is it this time? And she opens the door, and imagine Swami is physically standing there in front of the door.
My God.
And Swami tells the son, here, I went and gave her darshan. I mean, when you read about stories of the epics, that God went to Sakubai, or when God went and gave darshan to these great devotees, I mean, we have seen these kind of things happen in our own lifetime, in our own perceivable near future, I mean, near past, right? And why should we ever think that it is possible? It is not possible anymore. And I think that song which we played about Meera, that is what it stands for. That
Radha.
Yeah, the song of Radha.
Hey, but
when when you yearn, you will get it. It doesn't matter which time period you are, whether the avatar is there in a physical form or not. Always the truth was, if you yearn for him, you will get him. Right?
And I think that is so beautifully epitomized in the song that goes Ek Radha, Ek Meera.
Right.
It is supposed to be a song that brings out the differences between Radha and Meera, because it says one was a princess, one was a cowherdess, one... And yet, both are same. You know, this is an enigma, you know. If you ask anybody, is Radha luckier or Meera luckier? Its answers are divided. Some say that Radha is luckier, some say Meera is luckier. Some say both are equally lucky. And my doubt used to be, how can you say both are equally lucky when Radha lived with Krishna and Meera never saw Krishna? And that is something very striking. Though Meera never saw Krishna, she is considered up there on par with Radha, because both of them had one thing in common, and that is their yearning for Krishna. And I think that is what is also brought out beautifully in the song Ek Radha Ek Meera, which is making an attempt to show the differences between them, but only ends up in showing them being one. So, dear listeners, possibly we'll listen to this song, enjoy it, and then go ahead with this satsang.
Ek Radha Ek Meera, dono ne shaam ko chaha, antar kya dono ki chaah mein, bolo ek prem diwani एक दर्शन दीवाने एक प्रेम दीवाने एक दर्शन दीवाने एक राधा एक मेरा दोनों ने शाम को चाहा आई पर क्या दोनों की चाह में बोलो अंतर क्या दोनों की चाह में बोलो एक प्रेम दीवाने एक दर्शन दीवाने एक प्रेम दीवाने एक दर्शन दीवाने मधुबन में ढूंढा मीरा ने मन में पाया राधा ने मधुबन में ढूंढा मीरा ने मन में पाया राधा जिसे खो बैठे वो गोविंद मीरा हाथ बिछाए एक रानी एक दासी दोनों हरि प्रेम की प्यासी अंतर क्या दोनों की प्रीत में बोलो अंतर क्या मूरत लुभाने एक मूरत लुभाने एक सूरत लुभाने एक मूरत लुभाने एक राधा एक मीरा मीरा के प्रभु गिरिधर नागर राधा के मन मोहन सागम पधा पधम पर मगर गर सानी परे रे गम गम पम पध पध सानी परे आ
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a beautiful song, as we were telling you before the song was played. It's a comparison between Radha and Meera, but more than a comparison or a contrast, it was bringing out the similarity. As we were saying, it only matters how much we yearn for Swami, and the answer is always there, no matter whether you're a contemporary of the avatar or otherwise. So we'll go back to the satsang on the conversations with Swami. Again, a very important discussion is ensuing here. As we were saying, the other important role that Dr. Hislop was playing was being the one of the main people in the organization, Sai organization in America. So a lot of the conversations are in that backdrop, him asking about certain things which Swami has said. And this is about a discipline in the Sai organization which is very, very dear to Swami. So this is Hislop's question. Swami, in this matter I am not clear. Swami says that money should not be a part of spiritual matters, that money should not be paid. I accept this and have been strict about it to the extreme in the American Sai organization. But I do not understand the principle. It seems to me, and it does to most Americans, that almost no value is given to that which is free. Whereas, when money has to be paid, care is given, attention is given, and what costs money is valued. Swami responds to that by saying, yes, at first that is the case. But it does not last. The value given is sudden and like fireworks. It rises fast. But like fireworks, the fall is also fast. With the payment of money, there is no love or appreciation. You go to the shop and pay for what you want. Why? Why thank the seller or have any appreciation? You paid in full, and that is the end of it. Explanation that Swami gives, and this is true. What Hislop is saying is true from his point of view. You know, many times you see this when we get anything free, we don't value it at all.
Take it for granted.
We take it for granted. But the moment a price is put on it, you have a sense of this is valuable. If somebody is ready to put a price on something, then we say that service is unique, or it's not easy to come by. So he is asking about this particular discipline that Swami says. Many times I've met people in the ashram. People are coming for the first time. They will come and ask, you know, if we want to go and have Swami's darshan, where should we go? The times when Swami was physically giving darshan. So I would tell them that, you know, you just go down this way. There's a gate you just have to enter. Then they ask me, where should we buy the tickets? So there's no tickets. You just have to go inside and stand. And I've seen this look of disbelief in people. I said, no tickets? You mean there's no money? We can just go and see Swami? We can just go and speak to him? He said, yeah, maybe we just have to go and sit there. If Swami comes and speaks to you, you're lucky. They could not believe it. That, you know, a place which has such footfall, and it's so easy to monetize a situation like this. But Swami was always sure that was not Swami's way of working at all.
Even if you think of it, for example, one's mother or one's father, often taken for granted. We often take them for granted as children. Like they say, you know, my mother used to always tell my sister that when you become a mother, you will understand. same way, every mother tells their daughter and every father tells the son. And I feel that's right, yes. Oh, I wish I could go back and correct so many things, because I really feel I have taken my mother and father for granted. But you know, I think that is what it is. Mother and father, why I'm bringing the example of parents is because Swami says that in an earthly, worldly sense, the parental love, especially the mother's love, is that which comes closest to being selfless, like God's. So, when, as an example, if we have to consider a substitute for God's love, we take the mother's love. And though we take the mother for granted, throughout our life we remember our mothers. I mean, at least a large majority of us. I don't know the unfortunate few who don't remember their mother, but a large majority of us remember our mother, you know, whether biological or not. A mother is a mother in the sense from whom we have received that maternal love and grown. So when I'm saying mother, I'm not meaning just the biological mother, but a mother is often remembered. And though we took her for granted for so many years, we never forget her. And I think that is another example of what Swami is saying here, that when something is done purely with love, though it doesn't seem to make a short-term impact over next 5 years also, it doesn't seem to be making an impact. Because it has been done selflessly with love, it will stay forever. A mother is forever, mother's love is forever, and that's what Swami is also saying here. That's why no money being paid. In fact, Swami continues, he says, a guru will start a philosophy, a method of sadhana. Money will be charged and paid. Interest will rapidly expand, and people will think they must join and take part. Then in a few years, where is it all? A recent example is that of a young person. What was his name? And Hislop writes that the name has been deleted. The world over, people gave money to receive instruction from him. Where is he now? There is no word of him. Swami does not like that. He builds slowly, but it is firm and sound, and it continues. You remember Prashanthi Nilayam 14 years ago. And now you see how the slow but solid growth of Swami's work has happened.
Right. And so very true in that sense, you know, when you say that something is given free, as we're talking about the love and care that we receive from our parents, there are two times when things are free. One is when they don't have any value, and the other is when you cannot attach any value to them.
They're invaluable.
They're invaluable. And Swami speaks of spirituality in that sense. You know, the tradition of the Gurukula system that is part of the ancient Indian tradition, the Bharatiya tradition. You never have the guru charging anything from the disciples. He would give the education free. There was always a concept of a guru dakshina where the student would want to give something to the guru, which means there is no equation between what the guru is giving and what is being paid as dakshina. The dakshina is only a means by which you express your gratitude. That's all. There is no way you can pay for what you've received. And in that way, they were saying that this is valuable. I think the same is the case with all of us. I mean, how hard we all have tried to give something to Swami, and that is never possible at all. I say this, we have listened to any number of convocation discourses live from Swami, apart from the ones that we have the opportunity to, the recordings we have the opportunity to listen to. Even as students, 5 convocation discourses, and thereafter, I think 5 or 7 more at least, we have heard from Swami directly. Have we heard any one convocation discourse where Swami says, I've given you education, or you have to give me this, or now you should come and work in my organization? In fact, it was the other way around. It was always difficult to get an opportunity to work in Swami's institutions and organizations, because that was the value Swami was holding to what he was giving. And the way Swami is saying it, it's so beautiful. This value will be misunderstood initially. As Hislop was saying, something which is given free, people will think that it's not having any value. But with time, people will understand the value of what is being given. So the growth will be slow, but the growth will be true,
sure,
and sure in that sense. And today we see this in everything. In a time where we're talking about media going viral, we see that this whole thing has become, it's contracted, and we can see it in a real time now. You know, some video going viral, or you have a YouTube channel, or you have a Facebook page. We've seen this. A lot of people would come and tell us, you know, you can do a promotion, you can get numbers this way, you can do that. Then they say there is something called an organic growth, where people start seeing the value of what you're putting out there, and then they come to you and they want to be a part of what you're offering. Really, Swami is saying is that organic growth, which is true growth, and whoever comes of their own volition, and the people who are going to go and speak about this are going to speak of their experience. They're not going to market something which they have to do because that is the mandate given to them. It is going to come out of their experience. You and I are not speaking here because we're being paid. We are being paid. That has got nothing to do with what we are speaking here.
Absolutely.
What we speak here is because of what Swami has given us. You know, it is only
what we speak here is what we would speak even if we are not paid.
Even if you're not paid, right?
So that is what is Swami saying. In fact, I have not yet completed the answer that Swami gives. Swami continues. Swami says, spiritual matters must occur only in a context of love. When advice and instruction and help is given in compassion, in love, and not for money paid, there will be some feeling of appreciation. And in the context of appreciation and confidence, there will come spiritual benefit. Moreover, when the actions are done in love and not as part of money raising, money comes anyway. And again, Swami has validated that, this is so beautiful when Swami says that it must occur only in the context of love. Just do it out of love. And don't worry, everything else will come. I think that is the reason possibly why Swami showed those apparent problems when the super speciality hospitals were coming up. For the first hospital, we already saw that video, you know, during the video satsang
right.
that we had ago. On the 5th of November, where it looked so difficult and Colonel Jogarao was so much worried about what will happen, will the hospital come or not. That is one example. Even in the Bangalore hospital's case, from what we have learnt, Swami actually hypothecated a large amount of his land and his own residence at Vrindavan, you know, to pay for it. A person who could have just asked for donations and they would have come, Swami said, no, I'm just doing it. And when it was done, when somehow people got to know, oh my God, they came forward and, you know, donated. And at that point in time, you know, I got a feeling that this is something that possibly only Swami can do. God can do like this. But no, in fact, one of our seniors, his name is Gunaranjan, mm-hmm. he has started one of these companies called UC.
Right.
And UC, very interestingly, is meant, it has got a very nice logo of a smiley, because the mouth of the smiley is U and the face of the smiley is the C, the UC. Mm-hmm. And just like the words UC, it is based on transparency. So every single rupee that they are getting into their account as donation and every rupee that they are spending is out there on the internet. You can go and see now also. You can see, UC. But what they have adopted is, whenever they see a need, they just go forward and selflessly with all love just complete the project. And they just put up the details of the project. The media related to the project is there. You can go and see it with your own eyes. And if you really believe good work has been done, you can then buy that project, you know. You do a post payment, mm-hmm. not like any other charity where you give money for rehabilitation of the poor, the money is used for rehabilitation of the poor. No. When there's a need, they go and just rehabilitate the poor. That's done. If you go, you see, you are impressed, you know all the details are there, you can pay for it. If you pay for it, that money now is available for them to go ahead and do something else. So this kind of, you know, when you think that Swami is saying that do with love, money will automatically come. And there's an example in Swami's own life as with both the hospitals, how it has happened. And if we think that only for Swami it works, no. It works only for love. Swami embodied love, so it worked for him. If we are ready to embody that love, it will work for us as well.
Right, and the interesting thing is, Swami, this is something that Swami would tell even the students, and especially the students of the business school, the MBA program here. Swami would say this is how even business has to be done. Right? Mm. It is not only about seva, because especially where Swami is saying your money will come. We think that business or any kind of corporate work is about money and what can you do to make that money. Mm. Swami would say, you know, reverse the order. You go into the society and see, is there a need? Right? Is there a need for a product? There might be a society which needs good buses, right? Mm. There might be a society which probably needs a good hotel, a good restaurant where they serve good food, where people can have, and without any fear of spoiling their stomach, they can have some good food. So you see that as a need. You go and fulfill that need, the society will take care of your need, right? In the sense that money will come to you. It is not that. But the whole idea with which we approach work itself is different. You know, mm. where can I make money? What ends I should cut to make money? And this is, as I say, this is so true even for spirituality or a spiritual organization or an NGO, as true as it is for even professional life or you giving your talents to society.
And why it works like that, Swami makes it clear in the final part of his explanation. Swami says, an example, here is a coconut palm tree. Swami raised his arm in an upright position and showed it. And up there, Swami is touching his wrist, are the coconuts. This tree has a shadow which extends for a distance on the ground. Now a man who wishes to secure the coconuts climbs up the coconut tree. At the very time he is climbing the tree, his shadow may be seen climbing the shadow tree. And when he plucks the coconuts, his shadow can be seen plucking the shadow coconuts. The man who climbs the real tree secures the real coconuts, and at the same time his shadow climbs the shadow tree and gets the shadow coconuts. But if the man does not relish the task of climbing the real tree and instead limits his action to climbing the shadow tree, he will not get even the shadow coconuts. The shadow tree represents the world and the shadow coconuts represent worldly prosperity. The real tree represents spiritual life and the real coconuts represent the fulfillment of life. Thus, the person who devotes his life and energy to spiritual values will automatically get worldly benefits. And when Swami says this, both Hislop and Srinivas say, Swami, what a wonderful example, what a wonderful way to convey Swami's teaching that one should do his work in the context of love and not money. Automatically worldly needs are cared for. And then Swami asks, is it a good example? And both say, yes Swami, it's a perfect example. Swami always, you know, that sweet humility, I think that's so divine. Tell that, oh really good, huh? It's nice. Huh? Yeah, it is nice Swami. That's the example Swami gives.
Right. I mean, I think even as youngsters and students, whenever Swami would give this example, it was so striking, right? It seems like a very simple analogy, but it is so striking, and that's exactly why we don't find happiness going after the world, right? Because as Swami is saying here, even if you go after the shadow coconut, you don't get the shadow coconut also. At least if you get that, you're getting something.
Exactly.
But Swami says you don't get the shadow coconut also, but this way you get both. I think we can just introduce the next part of the discussion which Swami is having with Hislop. It's a change in concept, but maybe we'll just go through the first exchange or first couple of exchanges before we conclude, dear listeners. Hislop asks this next question. He says, Swami, a puzzle in daily life is this. Daily life is a continuous sequence of small choices, and we select the option which gives the best pleasure or comfort. In this way, our entire life is directed to comfort and pleasure, and such a life cannot take us to liberation. What to do? And Swami's reply to that is, the principle which Swami teaches is to like that which we have to do instead of doing that which we like. Every action should be done for Swami, every action dedicated to Swami. Then duty, discipline and devotion are the guides for action. So long as you take the body to be yourself, action will be for comfort and pleasure. Realize that you are not the body and be free of the need for pleasure and comfort. A beautiful answer once again. Though I said that the theme is changing, actually it's a continuation of the theme which they were discussing before this. And so, I mean, the question also was very well put together, I thought.
Absolutely.
And, right, and Swami's,
because it's correct. We always feel like means our mind and body keep taking us behind what is pleasurable and comfortable for us. But if we keep following that, we will never go towards liberation. So what to do? Very nice question.
I often used to think, you know, whenever we want to go on a journey, imagine I want to go to Mysore or Bangalore from here. I go to the bus stand. What will be the first thing that I do? I will first look for the buses which go to that place, right? And then among the buses which go to that place, I'll see which one is more comfortable, or which one I can afford, as much comfort I can afford. Imagine you going to the bus stand and seeing whichever is the most comfortable looking bus, I'll get into that.
You may go land
right?
up in hassle.
You not go anywhere. I think that's what Swami is saying. You first fix your destination or where do you want to get. Then you can look at comfort. And I think Swami would often, that's why I quote that example. I mean, the quote that Swami uses, less luggage and more, less luggage makes travel comfortable. Swami is not saying don't look at comfort in this life, but ensure where you want to get first, fix that, and then you can look at your comfort. I think as Hislop is saying, what we're doing is the other way around. We first look at the comfort and then let's see where we go chasing this comfort.
Even that quote when you say, when Swami says less luggage, more comfort, even if we are looking for more comfort, the way is by less luggage. We actually think carrying more luggage gives us more comfortable.
More comfort,
we want to carry everything that will keep us comfortable. It will not. Another point that came in my mind was when Swami is saying that don't do what you like, but like what you do. You should, whatever is given to you to do, you should enjoy doing that. My mind just, you know, the monkey mind, it just goes to the thing that what about me being told to do something which is against my conscience? Which is against my conscience, then what I should do? Because my conscience is absolute. Yes, if it's against the conscience, don't. That is Swami giving you. That is the way you show your duty by following. I think our primary duty is to follow the conscience. That is non-negotiable. Then, yeah, how do I know if it's my conscience or not? Then it, but if I am sure that it is my conscience speaking, and I think whenever the conscience speaks, we'll be sure of it. That time our primary duty is to do that. But in all other cases, when it's in sync with the conscience, we have to like whatever we are supposed to do and not try to do whatever we like. And I feel even in those difficult situations where we feel that it's going against the conscience, God is someone who always sees the efforts, sees the intention. So I think if we are earnest in our efforts, and if we are true in our intentions, help will come from unexpected quarters, and we will be saved irrespective of what the situation is, and it will be ensured that we do what is right. So I think what I told myself was, Arvind, don't start thinking of all the problems that may crop up if you follow it. Just start following it. When you are earnestly following it, this is Swami. I mean, when Swami being there, how can anything wrong happen? He is the most powerful force in the universe. So just go ahead, follow Swami's words, and everything will sort out by itself as it comes.
And Swami just puts in a capsule this entire explanation that he is giving in that one line. Duty, discipline and devotion are the guides for action. Right? And the only difference that Swami is asking us to make in our life is, when you want to do an action, don't think what will make me happy or what is most comfortable, what is most pleasant to me. Is it my duty to do it? Does my discipline permit me to do it? And is it something that is going to enhance my devotion? In the sense, is it going to take me closer to Swami? That's all that matters. If you're able to answer these questions, thereafter, if there are choices, I think within that, those choices, I don't think Swami is saying that choose the most uncomfortable pathway.
Most rigorous or inconvenient.
No, answer these questions. As long as your actions fall into this or fall in line with this, then nothing wrong. You can take a luxury bus to your destination.
On that note, dear listeners, we are grateful to Swami for this wonderful opportunity to think of Him. And especially on Ladies' Day, to think of all those crest jewels, examples who are definitely inspirations for us and for generations to come. May our yearning and pining for Swami keep growing every moment till we become one with Him. In advance, wishing you all a wonderful, holy and happy 95th birthday celebrations of our beloved Bhagwan. May it be a day when He takes birth in our hearts and stays there forever. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Tumhara rishta is dil se, dil hi samajh payega. Dur hoke bhi tumse, tumhara ehsaas karwayega. Par aaj, tumhari yaadon mein khoya, किसी बात पर ये रूठा है, ओ मां तुम बिन बेजुबा होने की शिकायत कर बैठा है, बेजुबा होने की शिकायत कर बैठा है।
उंगली पकड़ के चलना सिखलाया, जीना है क्या इसका मतलब बतलाया, दूर न जाना कभी तुम, तेरे बिना क्या दिन क्या रातें, माँ तुम आ जाओ ना, तेरे बिना क्या दिन क्या रातें, माँ तुम आ जाओ ना, साईं माँ प्यारी माँ, साईं माँ प्यारी माँ, देखी अनोखी से धड़कन तुम्हारा, सांसों में बसती है तू मेरी माँ, नजरों में भी